Welcome to Community Forum, a weekly call-in program produced at the studios of KSKA. Opinions expressed are those of the guest, host, and callers, and do not represent the views of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. And now, the host of Community Forum, Nellie Moore.
Good afternoon. It's another fantastic fall day here in South Central Alaska. Those the days I love when you live near the water. Two guests in the studio here today. First of all, Kathy Giesel, who is with Republican Women of Alaska. Is that the right way to say it?
Anchorage Republican Women's Club, yes.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No problem.
And Eric Croft, former state rep and Democrat. Let's see. And I guess, are you running for office next year?
Running for mayor in 2009, but right now I'm just a lowly prosecutor.
Okay, so we don't need to talk about that.
Okay.
No talking
we
about
can
that
if
on
you
my
want.
Show. No, no, no.
We could spend the whole hour talking about it.
I'm sure we could. It's
All
been
right,
a week.
Fine.
It's been a week since the big news that John McCain selected. What is her
who
name?
Who did he
Sarah
select?
Palin.
I never heard.
I'm sorry.
I've been missing the papers for the last
Sarah
couple of days.
Palin.
Who did he
my
select?
My age is catching up with me.
Yeah.
Kathy, has this energized the Republican Party here in Alaska? I just feel it.
Oh, Nellie, what an understatement. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, everyone is just so excited and working to get memorabilia, buy those pins, bumper stickers, yard signs.
It's action figures.
I don't know about the action figures.
I heard that today.
I saw those, and those are not real appealing, but whatever.
Who's making the action figures?
You know, I'm not sure, but you know, the big thing in Asia right now is those ball joint toys, and I think it's kind of a spinoff from that. Like, they're hugely popular, and that was the first thing I thought of when I saw them, because they have real prominent ball joints, like my arthritic joints. So today in Fairbanks, I guess there's a big rally as she arrives in Fairbanks for her Alaska stay. So that's about 4:30 this afternoon. Is there anything planned that you know of for the Anchorage area while she's here in Alaska?
I'm not aware of anything, Nellie. That does not to say that something won't materialize,
sure.
But I'm not aware of it at the moment.
Okay. Eric, Alaska Democrats, what was their reaction to hearing the news about Sarah Palin?
You know, it's a mixture. Everybody likes having homegrown stuff on the national stage. I mean, we like to see somebody we know and know a lot about up there. So there's a lot of excitement about it. And it's always nice for the economy to have 10,000 reporters running
no
around
kidding.
The state.
Even so, if they are half broke most of the time.
Well, they seem to be able to, you know, maybe they have a per diem too, like the recent stuff on Sarah's per diem. Maybe they have a per diem out there. But I think it's also raised a lot of the concerns that we've had. She's been in office for 2 years. I worked with her on some issues, but there's a lot of issues that I disagree with her on. So I think a lot of that'll come out. The speech she gave was fabulous at the mm-hmm. convention, and it was nice to have an Alaskan represent themselves well.
Kathy, I was very surprised. Even Voice of the Times wrote a glowing commentary about her speech, which I thought was excellent.
It was wonderful. Yes, she really knows how to communicate and connect with an audience.
And I know about that hockey mom lipstick thing because I was one for many years, and man, I'm telling you, I got tired of that really, really red lipstick. Where are we at right now? We're coming up on elections. We've got legal issues happening with Senator Stevens. At this point, Kathy, do you know how that's going as far as he is being charged with not reporting $250,000 or so of donations that were added to his home? I think, where are we at with that?
Well, you know, I don't know a lot more about that, Nellie, than you do, and your listeners probably from the media. I'm just not sure where that's at the moment, other than what I've read mm-hmm. in the paper.
Sure. And Eric, you and I were talking, you're a lawyer, and I was saying, well, Eric...
Prosecutor.
Even worse. what happens if Senator Stevens' trial goes on and he is convicted? What happens then?
Right. a lot of those thoughts have been bubbling up, people calling to ask, hey, wait a minute, what would happen? Apparently, there's no prohibition on a felon serving in the United States Senate. The United States Senate judges the qualifications of its own membership. The Constitution's, once you look into it, pretty clear about that. So only they can kick out – anyone can unelect, right? Any election, we can decide who we want to be there. But once the people have elected somebody, it's only that entity, that body, the Senate, that can decide not to. And I would think if he was convicted and somehow – and I wouldn't necessarily see how – but somehow elected after that, it'd be a pretty hard argument to kick him out. I mean, the other, he knows a lot of those other senators, and he can make the argument, look, they knew about this when they elected me. Who are you to tell the people of my state that they can't have me if they knew the facts and they did it? It's different than getting elected and then having a felony conviction. I wonder whether he regrets trying to have the jury trial so quickly, that is, before the election. It seemed like he was counting on both having it quickly and in Anchorage, and he only got one of the two. Now, it would result in the odd situation of he could serve in the Senate and could vote in the Senate, but he couldn't vote for himself. Felons can't vote in elections, but apparently they can vote in the U.S. Senate.
Actually, the big breaking news today, at least news breaking today, is according to Dow Jones, Newswires, and some others, the judge presiding over Ted Stevens' trial Wednesday rejected two attempts by the defense to dismiss the charges against a longtime Republican senator from Alaska. Judge Emmett Sullivan of the Federal District Court for the District of Columbia ordered the trial to go ahead. The first motion claimed the charges violated the separation of power statute between the judicial and legislative branches of federal government. And the second claimed the charges were constitutionally vague. So he faces seven counts of failing to acknowledge gifts he allegedly received from Vico Corp on the financial disclosure forms that federal lawmakers are required to file. At this point, what does that mean, Eric? Do you know? I know I just sort of popped this on you here.
You want an in-depth legal analysis from what you just told me?
In like 15 seconds.
Oh, great. We'll do that. I think those are arguments that the defense would do and would probably get rejected. The separation of powers, you can charge somebody. That's a mandatory disclosure for all U.S. senators, and the vagueness just never seemed to me to make much sense. So I don't think it's really a surprise.
The vagueness?
It's sort of the last refuge of a defense counsel, I would think, to just allege vagueness in the complaint.
Mm-hmm. Kathy Giesel. What are some of the plans for Anchorage Republican Women up between now and the election? Are there a bunch of rallies planned, or is it mostly door-to-door stuff and fundraising? I'm not familiar with the inner workings of political groups here in Anchorage that well.
Well, the Anchorage Republican Women's Club are part of the network of the Federation of Republican Women here in Alaska. That's eight different clubs. And we work hard to raise money throughout the year that we then use to support our candidates. Mm-hmm. So that's what the club has been doing and will be doing, distributing those funds to all of the candidates statewide as well as our federal candidates. And then the membership decides which campaigns they want to work on. And so they kind of dissipate into those various campaigns.
Mm-hmm. And how has the fundraising been going so far this year? Is it
very well? Very well. Yes, all the clubs together have a sizable amount of money that they will be allocating to the various candidates.
Can we say how much money?
I'm not sure I'm authorized to say, but okay. It's substantial.
Okay. Well, you can tell us. We won't tell anyone.
Of course. And they work in collaboration with the party itself, as there are federal limits and state limits on how much can be contributed.
As you know, we were just talking about Senator Stevens a few minutes ago. He was confident that he would win the election. He did win.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know there's been talk about Don Young, our Congressman Don Young, having to use some of his campaign money for his legal battle that he's maybe undergoing. And Ted Stevens may be having to do the same. I guess this has not slowed down the contributions at all.
to those individual candidates?
Yes.
You know, I haven't looked at their FEC reports for those individuals, but it appears not.
Mm-hmm.
And as each Republican Women's Club examines the amount of money they have and candidates they will be distributing to, they will weigh out where to distribute their funds also. And mm-hmm. so likely funds will go to each both Mr. Young and Senator Stevens.
I'm sure I think that would be a big black eye if it wasn't. Where it's, Eric, you grew up here. Tell me how are things going in the Democratic Party and what's your take on it?
Well, it's exciting times. It's the Chinese blessing and curse, as I understand it. May you live in interesting times. And Alaska elections always seem to have something strange and different about them. We always seem to be able to pull that out. Vic Vickers this time will be something we can talk about. You can know a real Alaskan who's been here a while if he remembers that name. But there's a tremendous amount of excitement because this is a real changing of the guard. You have a credible challenge to Ted Stevens, which I just didn't thought I'd see maybe in my lifetime. Always thought there is somebody out there that could knock off Don Young, and I think Ethan Berkowitz is the person to do it. But with the criminal charges, not only in them, but all the investigation we've seen at the local level, the corruption that has been exposed, I think this is a real exciting year for Democrats. It was before Sarah Palin's announcement, and now that's just sort of added another layer to the whole thing. In preparation for this, I was looking at sort of how the legislative races are breaking down, and we can go into it in more depth. But on the Senate side, there's 10 up every year. So, you know, there's 20 senators, 10 up. 5 Democrats and 5 Republicans are kept their seat. That is, they're not up for election. And by my count, and Kathy may have a different one, but I show sort of 3 Republican and 3 Democratic that relatively safe. That leaves us 4 seats up. I'd count seat E, which was Gary Wilkins, Pascavon against Henry as a tight race. A tight race for Lida Green's open seat, Menard, in that one. And maybe 5, now that I recount there. The Betty Davis, they always give a big run at. Kevin Myers running in John Cowdery's open seat against Doug Van Netten, and Wagner on the peninsula against Nels Anderson. That's 5. So, I think there's a lot of excitement. And if those fall one way, you could see a difference in the Senate for the first time in a long time.
And then over on the House side, I know one race that sticks in my mind is Representative Bob Boot got significantly less votes than the Republican candidate for that seat over in Sand Lake.
Right. There's 2 or 3 mm-hmm. Democratic seats that are, I think, up for the Republicans being taken back. The Boot, I think, prevail in the end. He's an excellent campaigner, but that's one that's in contention. I think there's a lot more Republican seats in contention than Democratic. My rough count was 12 or 13 that are going to stay solidly in each camp and about 15 then in between. But I count a lot of those that are up for grabs being Republicans. And that's just kind of the nature of having a majority when that more will be you stand to lose more when you have more to lose. But I think the Democrats can make some significant gains in the House as well.
Mm-hmm. The gas line, of course, Alaskans are really talking about, let's get that gas line going. Is obviously, this has been a big issue for the Republicans, and it will be hugely beneficial to the businesses here in Alaska. Are the Republicans doing any lobbying on the pipeline aspect? I know there's been some division with the party chairman, Randy Redrick, and Sarah Palin not getting along too well. So it sounds like there's some pretty rocky times politically within the Republican Party.
Actually, Nellie, you know, that's pretty well been resolved. And those bridges have been somewhat mended in that they have, I believe, set aside the hatchets, so to speak.
Is that right?
Yeah. That's my understanding, mm-hmm. and that's what I've seen lately, that there are bigger issues right now than the differences they have, though I certainly understand that the governor continues to stand against corruption.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as that gas line, absolutely, and resource development, absolutely. I mean, the interior is crying for some cheap energy sources. Mm-hmm. Heating fuel up there is just skyrocketing, and people are concerned about how they will heat their homes this winter. So we need to not only develop the gas, but also the alternative energy.
Mm-hmm. Eric, mending the fences between Palin and Redrick is, sounds like maybe...
You think they've kissed and made up? I wasn't in that meeting if they did, but they may have decided that with her running for vice president, it's, you know, there's bigger things. But that division is still there between the corporate, if you will, side of the Republican Party in Alaska that identified very closely with the oil industry and sort of the Palin reformer segment. You saw it in the votes on a lot of oil issues in the legislature. She needed Democratic votes when we had a split Republican Party who was trying to decide between its sort of corporate and reform aspects.
Mm-hmm. As far as that is concerned, it seems to me like getting that resolved, I know people don't really like to talk about it, and it's just kind of like underlying it, political issues, but it seems to me like a really smart move. And I think... it'll be real interesting to see how things progress with kind of that fence mending that you were talking about, Kathy.
Yeah. You know, I think that the Republicans are seeing that that needs to happen for all of us to move forward, mm-hmm. for there to be productive progress.
This is a huge, huge thing for Alaska, having Sarah Palin's name out there. Eric, there have been a lot of... strange things coming out in the news, the pregnancy of her teenage daughter, and then the dad showing up for the press conferences. It doesn't seem like it really impacted public opinion too much.
Well, this is also recent that who knows what's gone in the mix. I agree with what Barack Obama said and many others. I just think family aspects of this should be off the table. I don't know. The most angry I've ever seen my father was when I bragged once about telling off or maybe even getting a fight with some child of a political opponent. We had spankings, but I never remember him hitting me in anger. That was the closest I ever remember that he was adamant, you don't take this, you know, impose the sins of the father on the children. Mm-hmm. He never wanted it to be his decisions to hurt us. And he didn't want the other side, their children, affected by it either. I think that whole thing just should be off the table. And what we ought to be talking about is legitimate differences on issues over the last – well, right after it was announced, I got a couple of calls because Sarah Palin and I, of course, filed the ethics complaint against mm-hmm. Rinkus and Murkowski that led eventually to Greg Rinkus, the attorney general, resigning. And so they wanted to know about that, and that was odd, a Democrat and a Republican working together on that. Mm-hmm. I was proud to talk about that and give her strokes for that courageous step at that time. She was just a housewife or a hockey mom or whatever she was at then. She'd already resigned from the AJCC. Most recently, I've been getting a lot of calls because back in 2000, I sponsored a bill to make sure that rape victims were not charged for the sexual assault exam that they have to take if you're going to charge somebody. And it's mm-hmm, really, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a horrible event for them. And then that exam is almost another victimization because it takes a long time and it's a horrible thing. What the Wasilla Police Department was starting to charge women for the exam, trying to get them to put it on their health insurance. And they'd come in and see a bill for it later.
Wow, that's incredible.
And to the end, the police commissioner up there, the police chief of police, was defending that. We got it through the legislature unanimously, but that was under Sarah Palin's watch, you know. And so I think we should concentrate. She was mayor at the time, selected that police chief, and could have stopped that policy at any time. That's the kind of issues that I think are fair, not what her daughter's doing or her son, for that matter.
Kathy, any comments on that as far as all the news of her family, her children that's been coming out?
Well, I just gravitate to Eric's comment that she was just a housewife. This is a term that's, you know, commonly Ooh. Used. And
I'm
going
just
to
take care of that after
with
the
that
show.
One. Yeah, yeah, yeah. She is a very intelligent woman, as are all women, whether they stay home or whether they're an attorney or a doctor. And I applaud her courage. I don't know what happened with that situation with victims of sexual assault being charged. I would be interested to know whether the governor, the mayor at that time, even knew about that. She has always stood up for the small people, the regular people in this state, and I think that's part of the reason that she has so endeared herself to all of us. She's a regular person and understands regular people's issues. But I agree with you. I think the family issues need to be off the table.
Okay. Before I get in trouble with a lot of housewives, let me just say, I just meant she had no official position then. She was,
there you go.
She had quit her job with AOGCC. And it was a high profile enough bill. The chief of police was testifying about it. I don't think there's any way that she could not, but she never directly testified herself. I think part of the problem may be at the very end of that exam, they say, and this is to somebody who's been raped, well, would you like emergency contraception? That is, would you like something that would act as contraception mm-hmm. right after this? And that may have been a sort of ideological impediment. But whatever it is, they were the only police department in the state that was doing it and that objected to that bill.
Mm-hmm. It was probably in those times when we were all counting our pennies in the state coffers. At least that's the only thing I can think of. The Trooper Gate issue. Governor Palin some time ago let go Walt Monaghan, who is the former Anchorage police chief, because she felt he wasn't following her ideas of what needed to happen here in the state for public safety. And then other details came out that said it might be a family issue because she was not able to talk Monaghan into firing Trooper Wooten, and the story goes on from there. It doesn't seem like it keeps getting mentioned, but it doesn't seem like people are very upset about it. And Kathy, I don't know if you have that same feeling or not, but it just seems like people don't seem to really care. It hasn't impacted her popularity yet or anything like that.
No, it doesn't appear that it has. And certainly Mr. Monaghan was not the only commissioner that she has replaced during her administration, nor is she the first governor to replace a commissioner during their administration. So I'm not sure that the Alaskan people are really gravitating to that issue the way the press is.
Eric, any thoughts on that? It seemed to me like either people think it's really, really a big issue and other people think it's really, really not an issue at all.
Well, I mean, we have these civil service protections so that there's a whole layer of people who do their job that shouldn't be politicized, that you shouldn't have an incoming administration wipe out an entire group of people below a certain level. You have the right. So this is a conflict sort of between what you can do and what you can't do. You have the right to replace your commissioner, have commissioners that are implementing your policy.
Mm-hmm.
And really that's at will. You can do it whenever you want. You have no right to reach down into people who are protected by collective bargaining agreements or other civil service protections and kick them out simply because you don't like them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of allegations about what Trooper Wooten did, but there are procedures to do that. I think he was sanctioned. It may not have been a sanction that was enough in Sarah Palin's eyes or even a lot of other lessons, but that's the procedure. I think the jury's still out. We haven't had that investigation to know whether he was fired over policy or fired because he wouldn't bow into a pressure about doing something that she didn't have any right to force him to do.
I guess we'll hear more on that as things progress. You are listening to Community Forum on KSKA. It is a live call-in program if you're listening in the afternoon. Today we're talking politics with former State Representative Eric Croft, who is a Democrat and a Muni attorney.
Yeah, prosecutor.
And Kathy Giesel, who is with the Anchorage Women's Republican Club. Okay, did I get words out
That's
of place?
That's close enough. All the words were there. Different order, but hey, no problem.
For a long time, there's this one guest, and I can't remember who it was, but I would always call him by someone else's name, and it was really weird. Anyway, give us a call if you'd like to join in. You have comments or thoughts about how politics are going here in the state and all this wild Sarah Palin thing that's going on, even the creation of a Sarah Palin doll, and I understand there's also an Obama doll, but I haven't seen it yet. Anyway, give us a call, 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Ask those questions I'm not asking. 1-888 is our toll-free, 1-888-353-5752. And we did have someone email in, if Palin and Parnell both win their races, what is the process for selecting a governor?
Yeah, that was about the third question that Friday morning that I think most people had. Oh, interesting or great, depending on your political. And then, Parnell. And then, what happened? What happens next? I called Hollis French because we know each other and used to serve together. First, to ask who would be governor. Once he reminded me, I remember. Voting for these, you do a lieutenant governor designee. So that is if, you know, they both get killed in a plane crash, God forbid, or whatever, who would step in? That's the attorney general. So Talis Kohlberg would step in. It looks like now Parnell's not going to win the primary. I guess different things could happen, but it looks like Young's going to win it barely. So we're going to avert this sort of double thing. But as I understand it, Parnell would become the governor and the attorney and the lieutenant governor designee. The attorney general would step into that position. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you have a special election then for that. You just carry on with that until the next real election. Is that what you think?
That's my understanding from reading the state statutes.
Okay, there we have it. Let's see here. Now,
there's a related question that's a little complicated. Sorry.
Okay.
Which is, what happens if Ted Stevens gets in and then is forced to resign if the Senate decides that he shouldn't be there? And that goes back to, of course, the whole flap after
Murkowski
pointing
appointed. His daughter.
And then an initiative that Harry Crawford and I spearheaded down here to make sure that it is not an appointment, that it is now a special election. And so we would, if there's a vacancy, you just have a special election. You don't have any appointment.
Not even a temporary appointment, Eric?
Not even a temporary appointment, though, like all legal answers, it gets complicated and they'll send you a big bill or something. We proposed the initiative that said pure appointment. And that's been the rule, by the way, in the U.S. House for a long time, that you don't do an appointment. You simply declare the vacancy and hold the election. We put that on the ballot, or we certified it for the ballot, got enough signatures. Legislature decided they wanted to pass something substantially similar, except they put a temporary appointment in, so they added a new section. That passed, and so it got put into statute. Then the courts ruled that that didn't knock it off. It was not substantially similar, so the initiative carried on, and it was approved, which leaves this very odd sort of orphan section of the statute that the revisers say, well, it's here because we didn't repeal it because it wasn't written by the time we'd written the initiative. But it's probably not operative. Anyway, there's a section of statute. I think the better reading is that there's no temporary appointment, but some group of lawyers will get a lot of money if that happens.
And how soon would the election have to be held?
They have one within 90 days, I think.
You know, I was thinking it was 60, but
I guess we'll have to look it up.
Short time frame.
Maybe
she's read it. My memory goes back to when we were writing it then. She may be right. And the 90 I may be thinking of is you'd only do this if there's election within 90 days. Okay.
Okay, you are listening to Community Forum on KSKA. Today we're talking politics. Give us a call if you want to join in. Our local number is 550-8433 or the toll-free 1-888-353-5752 if you want to get something off your chest, or email at communityforum@kska.org. Let's see, Steve, straightening us out on line 7. Thank you. You're on the air, Steve.
Hi, this is Steve from Chugiak. I just wanted to make a comment. Everybody says Monahan was fired, and I understood that he was taken from that position and offered another position, and he turned it down. So he wasn't fired.
Yes, and it would have been a demotion. And Eric, how do lawyers split hairs on that one?
Depends on who's paying them, I guess. I thought he was offered that other position, refused it, and she got rid of him. But whether he resigned faced with that, I don't know. Certainly there was a pressure and a statement that he wasn't wanted in that position.
He was replaced.
Yeah.
He was replaced, right. Which she had the prerogative to do.
That's right, too.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Steve.
Thank you very much.
We're going to move on now to Robert on line one. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. This is Robert from Anchorage. I have two questions. Number one, true or false, was Sarah Palin initially for the Bridge to Nowhere and then flip-flopped, and now is she saying that she wasn't? And secondly, you know, I do have a concern for the independent prosecutor. I believe it's Hollis French, who's conducting an independent investigation. I'm wondering, will he be able to absolutely conduct a free and pressure-free independent investigation now that Sarah Palin has been selected to run for vice president?
Well, on the bridge thing,
Sure, Kathy, jump in. On the first one, I recall her being for it. I don't recall there being a Ketchikan event. There were a lot of events when I was running for governor at the same time that Sarah was, when we'd be in small towns, Kodiak and Homer and others. I don't remember a particular Ketchikan event, but I definitely had the impression that she was back then. Certainly when she says now she rejected it, she didn't reject the money. She rejected the earmark.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a distinction that she just didn't, in effect, want to be told where it had to be spent, but we still wanted the money. On Hollis French, I think that if Hollis can be impartial, and his job in this, selected by a bipartisan group of legislators in a legislature that is still majority Republican, though they're in a coalition, it was a coalition of Democrats and Republicans that said, you go out and hire somebody. And he hired Steve Branchflower and is overseeing and supervising that. But it's Mr. Branchflower that's doing the investigation. I don't think Hollis should do the investigation, but him monitoring and overseeing it, they thought, and I'd agree, he has the most experience to do that.
Kathy, is that pretty much?
I want to address that bridge, first of all.
Sure.
The bridge, when Governor Palin, when Sarah was running for office, had a price tag that was significantly less. And if I recall correctly, it was like $200 million or something for the bridge. By the time she was elected, that price had escalated to something like $600 or $700 million, significantly increased. It was a Cadillac bridge. It was more than simply a bridge from one place to another. It was a spectacular bridge. And it was at that point she said, we don't need this.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, it actually wasn't an earmark, because if it were an earmark, she would not have been able to redirect the funds. The funds were actually part of formula funds that went into our transportation budget. That allowed her to redirect those funds.
And to add on to that, she's right, but what the Congress had done is in effect say, you have this much money, and we're going to say that a portion of this goes to the bridge. So it was both part of the formula funding and an earmark. They sort of made it an earmark, and her request was that they un-earmark it, if you will.
And she succeeded in doing that, because she recognized that we simply didn't need a Cadillac bridge for this span of water. So to say that she flip-flopped is actually inaccurate. She supported a bridge that was a fundamental infrastructure item. She did not support an elaborate structure that was simply not needed, and therefore redirected those funds. Concerning the investigation, you know, an impartial investigation, the governor herself has said, bring it on. I'm open to being mm-hmm. having this looked at, and I fully support that. And I support her openness. As far as the bias that might be present, yes, I think that's a concern that we all have, whether it's Senator French or whether it's one of the Republican senators, you know, Senator Bundy, overseeing this. It needs to be an impartial evaluation, and hopefully we will get that with Mr. Branchflower.
My recollection of the personnel board, the group that she would like to investigate her in going so far as to file a complaint against herself. Now, we all know what it meant. It's I want you to investigate it. I don't believe I did anything wrong, but I want to put jurisdiction in front of you. And the personnel board, she's at least appointed one of those members. I mean, they're on a rotating basis. So on the impartial issue, going from somebody that a bipartisan group put forward to something that she's appointed some of the members of, I don't think we're getting any better on impartiality.
Great. You know, I think the concern that's been expressed, Eric, has been some of the comments that Senator French has made that have made him mm-hmm. seem exceedingly biased. And that's where the concerns have come from.
But you haven't got comments from Branch Flower.
And I think that, you know, I heard, too, this morning and on the news that French was trying to kind of back up and say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean all that. I don't know, you know, where that'll go. But and also today, never a shortage of news. How come when I was in news it was never this exciting? Let's see, Governor Sarah Palin is being asked by a local Republican activist now to release more than 1,100 emails she withheld from a public records request, including 40 that were copied to her husband, Todd. Palin claimed executive privilege for documents copied to her husband, who is not a state employee, in responding to an open records request made in June by Andre McLeod, an activist in Anchorage. The administrative appeal filed yesterday by McLeod's attorney, Donald Mitchell, argued that by copying Todd Palin on sensitive state correspondence, the governor and her aide shattered the privilege rightly afforded elected officials. She's allowed Todd Palin, who has not been elected by the people of Alaska, who is not a state employee, to entangle himself apparently as he sees fit in the operations of the executive branch of state government. And kind of on that vein, I'm maybe not so blatantly, but hasn't, in, I mean, most spouses, it seems to me, have, you know, played, whether officially or unofficially, and I could be crazy on this, a part in, you know, talking about the day-to-day of government. And I don't know, I understand that, you know, Todd Palin is around the office a lot, but I don't know how that's going to impact the case. Do you know at all, Kathy?
You know, Nellie, I don't. I don't know a lot about the details of this other than, you know, a spouse is a team member. I think any of us that are married
Eleanor discuss, Roosevelt comes to mind.
Oh, Hillary Clinton comes mm-hmm, to mind. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not sure that that alone is necessarily unusual or objectionable.
Okay, we're going to move on now. We've got some good calls coming up. And Harry, I'm sorry, but I'm going to take Dave first on line four. Who runs the state if you are running for vice president? I guess he's gone. Okay, Harry, let's get to clearing up some ambiguities on line five.
Hi there.
How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing just dandy.
Sounds like Harry T.
Pardon?
Sounds like Harry T.
Oh, you know it. I just wanted to clear up on the 60 to 90 days. That's what it is on the initiative. It can't be less. I mean, less than 60 days can't be more than 90 days.
Oh, okay.
And that's for the election that would take place to replace a senator.
Right.
Yeah. And I wanted to make a comment on the fact that over these last 2 years, Sarah Palin's put forth a number of initiatives, and she's had a couple of notable successes, but both times it was with a majority of Democratic votes and a minority of Republican votes. The majority of the Republicans opposed those bills, and, you know, all of her successes have been with a Democratic majority support, and now it's like the Republican Party has welcomed her again with open arms because she's now the Republican vice presidential nominee, where before people like Mike Hawker gave scathing interviews to the Los Angeles Times, saying couldn't tell if Sarah Palin was a Republican or a Democrat. And, you know, I was kind of proud of that.
Didn't know how to take that, actually.
So, you know, I was, you know, a few weeks ago, she wasn't in good stead with the Republican Party and hierarchy here, and now she's the darling. And I think that's kind of a dichotomy.
That may be, but I think where we're starting from is possibly a new place, Kathy, you know, with her being asked to be on the ticket with John McCain, I think changes things considerably. And for how would it be if Republicans continued that discord while she were running for such high office?
Of course, Nellie. It would be counterproductive. I don't think this is unusual. I don't think it's abnormal for all of us to be very proud that our governor was selected to run for vice president, regardless of what party you belong to. As far as the Democrat support that she received so far during her two-year administration, I think, again, that speaks to her ability to work across the aisle, to work with everyone. Yes, there are family disputes, but, you know, at the end of the day, families support each other. And I think that's what's happening. That's how I think of what's happening right now with the Republican Party and our unabashed support of our governor running for vice president. But I do think about that. I am very much aware of the fact that the Democrats often were very supportive of her initiatives, her legislation. And I think that just speaks to the fact that the woman is not a single-dimensional person. She has never portrayed herself as an extreme partisan.
Maverick, I guess, is the word they were throwing around last
exactly.
week.
Exactly. Just like John McCain, she has often broken ranks and yet retained conservative values, even though she has worked with all people of all backgrounds.
Eric, anything to add to that?
Well, when Mike Hawker said that she was didn't know if she was a Democrat or Republican, I don't think he meant it in a nice way. You know, I think we'll know signs of the Armageddon when she and Dan Fagan are embracing, you know, on some televised appearance. A lot of what she did, Democrats had been talking about for a long time, the need to get more of our fair share, a fair share from the oil industry, and it had been blocked by Republicans. I think the Republican Party in Alaska has somewhat of an identity crisis, and it's masked by Palin's personal popularity and this vice presidential run. Is it the old Republican Party that was very much aligned with the now defunct Vico and the oil industry, or something new? So I think this has been papered over and will be. The disagreements will not be talked about, but that doesn't mean they don't exist. There were serious divisions that are going to come back. And the ethics reform, the oil tax legislation, all were combinations of things written by Democrats over the last 4 to 8 years. And those have been the great policy initiatives of the first 2 years. We really didn't get to see the second half of Palin's administration to know what ideas she had outside of those. Those were big fights. They took a while. So both oil, AGEA, and ethics, what's next? And to some extent, this vice presidential race has meant we don't get to hear that for a while.
And go ahead, Kathy.
Well, I just want to comment here. You know, I think that most Republicans will agree that in some cases we've lost our conservative compass as far as fiscal conservatives. And I understand what you're saying, Eric, about some of these initiatives came in part from the Democrat Party. But, you know, if you don't have the leader who can rise up and bring all these ideas together and bring them forward, then they do sit dormant and they sit divided. And I think what we have in Sarah, if I can be so familiar as to call her by her first name, She has demonstrated that she has that leadership. She can bring all these people together and forward combined initiatives, merged ideas, which work for the common good. It's that leadership element.
I think many people were very pleased that she has gotten the gas line moved forward as far as it has been, and that for years it's just been kind of backburnered, or although there have been certain things like the shortage of gas for Kenai and the gas shortage we're about to face here in South Central for power generation is...
It's huge. And talking to Mayor Whitaker up in Fairbanks, the interior, and we know Bush villages are facing it. Fairbanks is facing a crisis, and we're next. You know, South Central shouldn't feel like it's immune from this. It's next on the radar screen. I think we have to. And to give her credit, and Sarah to me is a mixed bag. I like her a lot personally. I enjoyed working with her when we did the ethics things. There's some very serious policy differences. We talked about one on the rape bill, but on the rape exam bill, but on AGEA, she's done. I think even there, the jury's still out. I like the progress she's made, and I think an independent pipeline company makes some sense. But you have not got the oil industry to agree to it, and that was always the stumbling block.
Mm-hmm.
Murkowski gave away too much to get their agreement. I thought we should have put more fiscal tools like the reserves tax to get them to come to the table. But in effect, they haven't yet come to the table. Two of the oil companies are saying they want to do their own pipeline, and one, Exxon, with its traditional subtlety, is saying, never know how, we'll tell you when we're ready.
Mm-hmm.
That's not there. That's some progress and a compliment are for it, but we have not yet got the leaseholders on the slope to agree to anything.
Mm-hmm.
2 years. She's been there 2 years.
That's true. And so I want to keep her. That's why I think you ought to vote for Obama, is to keep Sarah right here in the state.
No.
Okay. Let's see here. Makes for some interesting conversations in the bars, I bet. Okay. We have a caller concerned about the story that Sarah Palin had books removed from the library or requested that books be removed. What's the story on that? And I think, Kathy, a lot of people are... she apparently, according to the Frontiersman, had tried to replace or asked about getting rid of some books that she thought were objectionable that were in the library in Wasilla, and it didn't happen. And I think she either tried to get rid of or got rid of the librarian.
I think short of it. I think she got rid of the police chief, but I think she questioned the librarian and then did not remove her.
That actually does sound right now. Okay, we're going to move on now. Let's get some phone calls caught up here. David on line two, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I have several questions here that I'm concerned about as far as fiscal responsibility. The $1,200 rebate was voted on, and then after that, I'm not sure the specifics, but I do know that apparently, Sarah Palin decided to pay out the permit fund 3 weeks early, which is the $1,200 is attached to that. And I was trying to calculate, did a little investigation, trying to figure out what 3 weeks' interest on $2 billion is, and it's like $1.5 million. But it's not money she spent, it's money we didn't earn, although the intent was to help out interior villages, I think, to get the money sooner. But when you're getting $3,200, or if you have a family, lots more, that you could... get a loan on that money if you're in that dire need. And also, Randy Riedrich, as you talk about Sarah Palin, we have Tavis Smiley, had Newt Gingrich talking about the corruption and forcing the man to resign, and then Rudy Giuliani about the same script talking about corruption that Sarah Palin. I tend to think she might be not correcting people, that the other correction of eco stuff is. But she made whistle blew on Randy Riedrich, and he resigned, and he's chairman of the Republican Party, and he's on the floor of the Republican Party, and it seems like it's a tainted thing there that that the Republicans are overlooking. Also, on this library story, I heard that there were tapes had been destroyed because they were 6 years old, and also we did a Matt Maid, if you like, about bailing out, but well, there you go. The interest of $2 billion and Randy Riedrich are some of the. I'll let you all take over there. Thank you.
Okay, Kathy, I think you talked earlier about Randy Redrick and Sarah Palin hands across the water to get a working relationship going. But what about after she had won the election, she asked for his resignation. That didn't happen. And I think what David is asking is, why is he still there? Why hasn't the Republican Party booted him out?
Yes. Okay. I understand the question. Because there are processes in place that elect the party chair, the Republican Party who functions through the State Central Committee between conventions chose to leave him in place. That's their prerogative. Just as the Alaska Democrat Party can do whatever they choose as far as their leadership as well. And this issue has been thoroughly debated. It was debated extensively at our state convention in March. And the judgment was to leave him in place. And so it really isn't an issue between the governor and Mr. Redrick. It's an internal party issue. There's really nothing I can add to that. It was the party's decision. As far as the rebates go and distributing the PFD early, I cannot comprehend how anyone could object to caring about individuals in the interior and in our rural villages who are trying to pay bills and keep their families afloat, buy food, pay for their heating fuel for this winter. Those barges don't come in year-round. They come in during the summer, and there's a narrow window to purchase your fuel. And I believe that the governor was honoring that need and trying to meet it as soon as she could.
And also, I think you brought up the issue of borrowing money. That there are very few banks in rural Alaska. There are banks mm-hmm. in the major communities like Kotzebue, Nome, Bethel. But as far as being able to fill out a bank loan in a village, it's pretty non-existent. And based on the fact that there are very few jobs in the villages, I would be shocked if in our current economic climate that a bank would loan money based on that.
I think it was a good decision to send it early and a good decision to do it all. You know, it was funny to me watching a lot of legislators that I know don't like the dividend, have said in private conversations they don't like the dividend, holding their nose and voting for that. On Randy Redrick, I mean, let's remember, this is the original place where Sarah Palin made her name, or after the lieutenant governor's race. She objected because Randy was sending emails to the companies he was supposed to be regulating. They're supposed to be regulating the oil industry. He was letting them know information, some of which she alleged was confidential information. That's a betrayal of public trust. You're put there to monitor an agency, to keep those secrets, and to make sure that they do the right thing. And instead, he was letting them know what he shouldn't. That I think it's outrageous. I was at the Democratic convention, not the Republican convention, but was there a vote on it, or was only the Central Committee?
No, there was a vote on it by the convention.
Was it a close?
It was close, yes.
Okay.
But they voted in Randy's favor, and it is what it is. And the governor really does not have control over that process.
I agree with that on Kathy's. I mean, she can't, she can't reach down and fire him. That's a Republican Party decision. I don't understand it, but I agree that it's not Sarah Palin's call. On fiscal responsibility, you know, that's a misbag too. We support the amount of money going to the citizens. This is the biggest operating budget I've ever seen, and probably twice as big as most of the operating budgets that I dealt with when I was in the legislature, and it wasn't that long ago. So there were capital budget vetoes, but very few operating budget vetoes, and the budget just went tremendously up. And I think a lot of that was some pent-up need, but some of it was questionable.
And we were flush, too. I mean, there's a lot of money floating around Alaska thanks to oil right now.
And the pent-up need, the infrastructure needs that have not been addressed for so long.
Well, and because of oil and because of what largely the Democrats and Sarah Palin and part of the Republicans, a minority of the Republicans, We wouldn't have that money just because of the rise in oil prices. It took us changing the laws to make sure we got a fair share of that.
Good point. Okay, quickly, line three and Kent. Sorry for the long wait.
Not a problem. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, mine's more of, I guess, a comment question. Just regarding, I was watching both of the Democrat and Republican deals on TV, and basically my concern is I didn't vote for Palin, but I did like her as a governor. I was impressed with, I've seen her speak in public many times, and some of the issues she was taking on I thought were very genuine, very real. But watching her at the Republican convention, I was actually very disappointed in her, I guess, her attitude and her demeanor. It seemed like she was obviously reading someone else's speech. And my concern, I guess, for us in Alaska, she's only a governor for, you know, barely 18 months and made herself, made some decisions that we won't see the repercussions of until later on. And, I mean, it seems like she could be very subject to a lot of this national, she's very freshman status in this national tank of sharks, so to speak. And I didn't really feel that she had the integrity to hold up because of that speech. And then we haven't heard anything else from her. So I guess I'm just, my concern for her being a freshman in the national agenda. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
I wasn't sure what you meant by hold up that integrity.
Well, it seems like, you know, watching her speak in Anchorage a few times and just, you know, paying attention to her on the national agenda or on the state agenda, she just seemed, when she spoke on the national level, it just seemed like there was a lot of, it just didn't seem like her.
I had heard that comment a little bit. I'm not sure. Kathy, any response to that? We're running out of time quickly here.
Truly, I thought I did hear her very clearly. I know that she was ad-libbing for portions of that speech when the teleprompter was not working.
And very quickly, John on line 8, got to make it quick.
Yeah, I was just wondering what she must have been thinking when she identified her son, Track, and his date of deployment. And his unit, she's justly proud of him for being a soldier and going to Iraq, but it seems like she's endangered him and his unit and the whole mission by giving so much identifying information. And he's up there on stage or isn't any terrorist in Iraq that doesn't know exactly what it looks like and where he's going to be.
Okay, well, thanks, Eric.
I did cringe over that. You're not supposed to say the deployment dates. But
and I did hear that later on. And I'm sure, based on a mother's love, it'll never happen again. Okay, I won't swear to that. But I wanted to thank both of you for being here today. We just ran totally out of time, faster than I realized. Kathy Giesel, thanks for being here today very much, and I hope you'll come back again.
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me.
Appreciate
and
it.
Eric Croft, thank you again. And I want to remind our listeners that tomorrow is September 11th. There are a number of ceremonies or whatever that people can do to remember the events of that day a few years ago that changed Alaskans' lives and the rest of the United States' lives forever. And I want to invite you back next week for another community forum. And remember to vote during the next election. It's always a problem for us. Hopefully there is high interest. So I'll see you next week.
Forum is a production of KSKA's News and Public Affairs Department. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write to us, KSKA 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska 99508, or email us at communityforum@kska.org. Additional information on today's show topic, including relevant website links, will be posted along with audio of today's program on our website at kska.org/communityforum. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.